Hi, everybody. They want me to use the microphone. Can you hear me? All okay? Okay. Perfect. Thanks for being here. Feel free to sit down, fill in wherever you'd like to. Like you heard, I'm Michael. I'm here from Flocknote. I'm joined by my lovely colleagues, Corinne and Oscar and Bianca in the back. Give a little wave. You can see us at our booth in the exhibit hall, too, with Flocknote if you're not familiar with us already or if you want to chat with us. The main topic today is how to ask for money and have fun. And so we're going to be looking at, well, why is it not fun to ask for money? How can we fix that? Yeah, we could just spend the whole time on that probably, right? And then just some little practical tips. So the goal walking away today, yes, it wherever you'd like. The goal is that you're leaving thinking, oh, here are some things we could improve on at the parish or the diocese or in my ministry. Here's something I can do tomorrow, next week, next year, whatever, but specific. So that's the goal. We're going to leave time at the end for questions as well. I know some people put some questions in the app, so I'll try to answer those as we go. But if I don't, re-ask them. I'm not ignoring them there. So you might be familiar with Flocknote. If you are, you're probably familiar with us as an email and texting service. We're not going to go deep diving on Flocknote here. We'll show some examples and everything to support some of our best practices. But just a little bit about us. We were founded 15 years ago to build a more connected church and to have Father actually be able to reach his community in between Sundays and on those, you know, to those parishioners who aren't showing up on Sundays anymore. And so that continues to be our mission. Since then, we've continued to listen to the church, and now we also do member management, online giving, donor management, event registration, and we're an all-in-one software for your parishes and for your diocese. So just to give you a little swath of what we do at Flocknote, but enough about Flocknote. We're going to kind of keep focused on how to have fun asking for money. So I'll start off with just a little bit of a question. What are some reasons that it's not fun to ask for money? Yes. You've already asked for money before. Excellent. What else? What are some other reasons that it's not fun to ask for money? Yes. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, you know people are struggling. It's hard to ask those folks. Great. What else? I'm sure you have way more. Yes.
Fear of being rejected.
Fear of being rejected. Awesome. Not awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
You have to hear them in the confessional as well.
Oh, man. We cannot relate. You have to hear them in the confessional as well. Yeah. That's tough. Yeah. Great. Yes. Yeah, a lot of different things competing. That's a good one. Anything else stick out to y'all? Yeah.
Seems like ulterior motives are behind it, or it can come off as that it's not about the gospel, it's about earning money.
Yeah, 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 that there's some other motivation behind it. It doesn't feel authentic or whatever. Yeah, those are really good ones. So I have some of these on the screen here, some that you didn't mention, some that you did mention, but it is hard. You know the times are tight. You might not know the people well. You feel funny about the ask. You don't want to talk about money, whatever the case is. And obviously we're all in the business, or I should say it's part of our work for the church to ask for money in some way or another. And so the hope is that it's not always going to be fun, of course, but there are some key ingredients that do make it fun. And when I say fun, I don't mean like, oh, this is so great. I mean like, no, this feels right. We're asking the right questions. We're doing the right thing, and everyone feels good about it. That's ideal when that can happen. So that's what we're looking for. And, the case I'm going to make here is that there's one thing especially that's missing when it's not fun to ask for money. One thing that's sort of the difference between I'm imposing an awkward question on someone and I'm actually inviting someone that I know something about to do something I know they want to do. Something, the difference between I don't like this part of my job and I'm so excited. It's time to make an ask. It's time to ask people for a gift, right? Has anyone had that feeling of like, oh, I'm so excited for the day the campaign opens up or that I get to ask people? I see some of these. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, just wait. It's coming. Okay. So the thing that it is, it's not special data. It's not, you know, doing advertising the right way. It's not a perfect script. But the thing that really makes the difference, the thing that's really a game changer, is having buy-in from your parishioners, from the parishioners across the diocese, from the people that are part of your ministry. When people are bought in, when they care, when they know what you're doing, when they're all about it, when they're informed, that's when it can actually be really fun to say, hey, it's time for you to help with this project that you care about. It's time for me to have the privilege of inviting you to this thing that you care about, this thing that you're excited about. And I know we all know, yeah, buy-in, that sounds important. I'm familiar with buy-in, right? But I really want us to think about it because I have some specifics of how do we get buy-in. And I think each of these are sort of traps where it's easy to feel like we're doing these things. It's easy to feel like we have buy-in. But really, if we're not feeling like awesome about asking people, most people, for money, we might not have buy-in. And there's a difference, too, between a successful campaign and really having buy-in from people. So you can reach your goal in the right amount of time, but maybe still frustrate parishioners or kind of frustrate relationships or have something take way too long or discourage people from giving again. So, of course, we're shooting for not just a short-term campaign that we want to do or this one fundraiser for this one new piece of art for the church. This is something we want to ask well, ask constantly or consistently, I should say, and kind of long-term and short-term success in that way. So there's three ways that we're going to talk about in terms of getting buy-in. What does it look like to get buy-in? How do we have people who are bought in? Because when they are, and I'll show some examples of this, when they are, it is a game changer. It's a different story of what it looks like to make an ask and to have people to donate or to invite them to participate. So those three things. The first one is committing to a clear, concrete goal, a clear vision. And I know everyone knows this. We know it in our minds that this is important. But it's pretty common, I would say, to see a campaign or a fundraiser or a mission, you know, raising money for something, and it's not clear. It's not clear sometimes to the parish, which is not great. It's not clear to the parishioner. And if people don't really understand where is the money going, what is happening here, what's going to come from this, it's hard to get them to buy into it. There's nothing to buy into. It's too vague. So we'll look at some examples, but the more specific, the more concrete we can get with what it is that we're inviting people to, the much more likely they're going to be bought in because there's something to buy into. So a few examples here. This is probably not any of our examples, but exploring space, to take a non-church example here, right? So JFK, 1962, I think, he says, hey, we're going to, like what he didn't say was, we're going to go explore space. This is the big mission that we have this decade. We're going to explore space. That would have been exciting and cool, and it would have been like, that's awesome. We're exploring space. That sounds new. That sounds great. But what does that mean? Are we, like, making maps? Are we putting a rocket up there? Is a person going up there? And of course, he famously says, no, we're not just exploring space. We're going to put a man on the moon and bring him back in this decade. Same idea, same project, but much more specific. And all of a sudden we say, oh, that's awesome. I can buy into that. I can get excited about that particular project. And I'm going to know if we don't reach the goal. We're going to know if somebody didn't go to the moon, right? We're going to know if they did. We're going to know if we succeed. We're going to know if we fail. I can get excited about this if this is something I care about. So some more relevant examples here. We might have a campaign, mission, or slogan, or theme, love God, love people, make disciples. That's wonderful. That's the kind of thing that gets us to heaven. That's the kind of thing Jesus asks us to do. But it is not quite the kind of thing that's going to specifically tell us what's happening in that campaign. So what is it that we're doing? What is it that we're building or making or supporting? That's where we can get some buy-in. So if in this case you're working on a building project or something, we're going to build a beautiful Gothic-style church, towering spires, cemetery, and we're going to do it in 8 years. Then all of a sudden your parishioners choose, yeah, I'm excited about that, or no, I'm not excited. But it's a lot more specific than love God, love people, make disciples, right? So getting as specific as we can, because people want to support something, something tangible that's happening. Improving Catholic education. Everybody in this room, I'm sure, would say, yes, I would support that. I think that is a good thing. But all too often, it's not clear how we're doing that. So there's lots of different ways. In this case, it might be, hey, we're going to build a new charter school and we're going to focus on raising Catholic kids who practice their faith, who can pray. All of a sudden we say, well, that sounds awesome. I know what that looks like. I know what that could be. Now I feel like I'm contributing to something. I know what's going to happen. That's great. One more example, promoting the sacraments. Again, these are all good things. There's nothing against anything here. These are the things we want to be doing, including space, I suppose. Exploring the sacraments, let's get a little more specific. Let's get every family to confession by the end of the year or in a year or something like that. And that does a couple things. One, everyone knows what their part in the goal is. I have to go to confession this year. I need to make this a possibility. But also, if you're the pastor, all of a sudden now, your attitude changes towards it. It's not promote the sacraments in some kind of a vague way, but now you're up on the altar or at the pulpit and you're looking out at a family and saying, I can start on this project today, right? I know what it looks like. I can ask that family after Mass if they've been to confession and invite them. So when goals are specific, first of all, you can start creeping towards success and knowing what that looks like, but also people start to buy in and know what that means to participate. So whatever project you're working on or going to work on, think about, is it specific? If you ask me, could I say in one sentence what we're doing and someone totally gets it in a practical way? And if not, sort of nail that down a little bit, because that's where you're going to get a little more excitement. So that's the first piece. Have a goal, have a vision, and commit to that. The second, which is really closely related, is put something at stake. And I don't mean you have to artificially put something at stake if you succeed or something like that. There's already something at stake. At the basis of all of what you all are doing, I would argue in almost all cases, is the salvation of souls somewhere, right? That's at stake somewhere in there. Maybe that's a little indirect. Maybe it's direct. Maybe there's something else that's more clearly at stake. But name that. Have people realize what that is. People should know, if I commit to this, something will happen. If I don't commit to this, something else might happen, or something's not going to happen that I care about. Because if someone's going to contribute their time, their talent, their treasure to you or to your project, it means that they're not contributing to something else. So what's at stake? What is it that matters enough for them to make that choice and to kind of switch over to what it is that you're asking their attention on? So to take each of these examples again, exploring space, there is a lot more than just like the rocket ship and going up and how cool it would be and being good scientists and explorers. It was a bigger deal to the American people then, right? It was America versus communism. It was sort of like defending our way of life. It was more like a question of what is life going to be like for our children and grandchildren if we're not accomplishing this sort of thing on this timeline. So it was this international sort of multi-generational goal as opposed to just a project we're working on. Something was at stake and people are excited about the specifics and what's possible if we achieve that goal. With building the church, we got specific. We said what it is. People like the idea. They like the drawings. But what's really at stake? Well, it's probably something like making a place that we can build our whole family's life around, not just going for a week, going once a week for an hour, you know, like the grocery store or something. We know it's important, but we really don't spend time there. Our heart's really not there. Something more like, this is where we're going to be hatched, matched, and dispatched, right? This is where we're going to spend our time. We're going to go early on Sundays. We're going to stay late. We're going to go for Bible study. There's spaces for us to interact with people. This is where my family's life is going to center around. And all of a sudden, asking someone to contribute to a campaign is asking them to contribute to their own family's future at the church. Asking them, do you also think it would be awesome to have your family's life built around here? Do you think it would be helpful to build this kind of church with this kind of layout? Great. Well, then, you know, join us on this journey. You can contribute. You can pray. You can volunteer. But this is what we're working on, and we want you to be a part of it. And something's at stake if it doesn't happen. For the school example, are we going to have children who practice their faith, or are we not? That's a big thing. I think somebody asked on the app how to approach people that we haven't asked to give before, I think. Maybe people we don't know. there's a lot of different answers to that. We can talk more about it, but I was thinking about it in this example. I think one thing is just to approach people and ask some questions. What do they value? Do they have kids? Things like that. But if you have this common thread in a quick conversation of, oh, you know, you care about Catholic education or the faith in your kids, you know, if you could spend some time or money helping to improve that, if we had a really exciting project, would you be interested in hearing about that? Oh, you know, you would? That's great. We do have a project like that, right? But connecting, hey, this is really important to us. We're a little worried that if we don't build this school, something bad is going to happen, but something really awesome could happen if we do. Do you connect on that, even though I don't know you all that well yet? If so, we have a nice connection point to talk about there. And then finally, a very obvious salvation of souls example. This is a heaven and hell thing at stake. Is our parish family going to meet each other again in eternal life? And is that going to happen? Is that not going to happen? How can we encourage that? Let's get to confession together this year. It really carries these bigger consequences. And people get excited about those things. So if we are specific about the goal, specific about what's at stake, what's going to happen or not happen when we do it, we're much more on the path to people being excited about what we're doing. We haven't asked anything yet. We're just kind of communicating these things, which brings us to our third point. Communicate all of this well. And communication, oftentimes we make the mistake, myself included, of putting information out there and sort of hoping that people hear it, kind of a one-way communication. Oh, I sent the email, or I put it in the bulletin, or we had somebody announce it at Mass. But communication really, of course, is someone saying something and then someone else receiving it and digesting it and hearing it. So is that happening? And I'd ask you to think about that just privately, that project you're working on at the diocese or in the parishes. Of course, I know every one of you is working to put the information out there. How well do you feel like it's being received on the other end? Because if you have a really great goal, if you have something at stake, but if you don't effectively communicate it well to a lot of folks, of course it's not going to take off as well, right? Because it doesn't have the legs to be able to do that. So a few specific examples of how to communicate well. First of all, this is why Flocknote exists. We get very excited about communicating well. I think we could all agree the best way to communicate with someone. Well, maybe I'll ask, what's the best way to communicate with someone? Flocknote, that's great. I'll pay you later. What else? What else is good? In person, face to face. Yeah, I would agree with that. In person, face to face. That's the best way. But that's hard to scale. That's hard to do. They might not even be at church. We don't know who they are yet. And so we, of course, as a company, especially in kind of our mission, is focusing on what does that digital relationship look like, that digital communication that you have, email and text message, meeting people where they already are. So I'd encourage you, if that's not something you're already doing, kind of a good way to email, a good way to text, to think about adopting a tool that does that well, that you can use, or maybe using a tool that's already in place in some other places at the church or the diocese, and to be able to adopt that, because that's where people are. There's other ways to communicate as well, but to reach a large amount of people and have them see or open those communications, there's a lot of different options, but emailing and texting, as boring as they may seem, are consistently still the best way to reach large groups of people, especially when you do it well and you have a history of communicating well. So a second piece of this is to communicate your value often. We like to say that for every one time that you ask for a gift, or you ask someone to come to an event, or you ask, you know, someone to do something or to take action, you should probably have sent them 9 or 10 messages about something else that they care about before that's ever happened. Here's what's happening at the parish. Here's what we're doing. Here's where the money went last time. Thank you for your gift. We have a really cool speaker coming this week. Here's the Mass schedule for Holy Week. Like, things that people care about that's relevant to them, so that when an ask comes around later, people say, oh, right, this is how they communicate with me. I recognize this email address. I recognize this person. They're much more likely, of course, to understand the value you already give to them and then to be more receptive to whatever the ask is that you have. And we'll look at a couple examples of this. The other thing is, don't be afraid to spend a little bit of time on communication, because it really matters. If you craft the perfect goal and you really identify what's at stake, but it just kind of falls flat in terms of communicating it to folks. That's such a bummer, right? Because you put so much work in, but it just didn't get out there. And it feels to me like a totally different expertise, or kind of, you could be really good at all the other things, but sort of maybe not great at communicating, or you love communicating, but the other pieces are hard. So it does take a little work sometimes to say, no, I have a plan. Here's how it's going to go. I'm going to take a couple extra minutes to, or, you know, hours maybe, to make it look nice. I'm going to look at the message, see how I can make it shorter, but still say the same thing. I'm going to reach the right group of people. I'm going to make sure that my volunteers know how to use it too. Take some time, because it matters. It'll pay off. It's something, it's a good skill to kind of work out at the parish or the ministry always, to be able to communicate well. So don't be afraid to spend time there, because it'll pay off indirectly down the line for sure. I've been at so many parishes. We've moved around a bunch in maybe the last 10 years or so. And almost all the parishes, I would say, that I've been at don't communicate very well. They just, I don't hear from them. I might get something in the mail, maybe just my envelopes. We still get like envelope packages from a church in Vermont. We don't even live in that state anymore. And it's sort of like, well, I wish you would email me or tell me things that happened at the parish. But some of the parishes that communicate well with me, even if I never have spoken to the pastor, I just feel connected to that parish. I just feel like someone cares in that office to sort of like collect my email address, talk to me, ask me what I'm interested in or whatever. So it makes a difference. And then finally, target your communications. That's a harsh phrase. Maybe what I just mean by that is list segmentation, reaching the right audiences, not saying everything to everyone, which I think is a big risk, whether you use Flocknote or something else, using that master list or that everyone group just to send everything out. But of course, if you do that, folks read it once. They say, this is way too long. This has nothing to do with me. Why do I need to know the altar server schedule? I'm 80 years old, you know, and then they're not going to open the next message and the next one. And whenever you ask them for a gift or invite them to a conference or whatever it is, they're done with you. You're the email in their inbox that they're not interested in anymore. So if you're able to have your group set up for different ministries or ages or families or existing donors, new donors, recurring givers, all those sort of things, and you communicate a little differently with each of them, you stand a much better chance of them feeling like you've reached out to them intentionally. So a few visuals and just examples of how we do this in Flocknote. You can say very little content in a message and have it look really, I don't want to say boring, but I guess I mean boring, kind of something not interesting, not eye-catching. Or you can have a nice template, have a nice picture at the top, have a nice color scheme, have some sort of consistent branding for the church in a header or something like that. So this is just a simple newsletter that you can send out in Flocknote. This is what it looks like on somebody's computer. It'd be a little different on their mobile device. But when my parish sends something like this, I say, this is nice. Like, this looks nice. And if it, what it says in there is also relevant to me, I'm much more likely to have that relationship that keeps going with those emails in my inbox. If you've ever used Flocknote, the Note Composer is also as simple as we can make it. So hopefully if you're using something else, it's similar too, where you can just drag and drop things, put things in. You don't have to take a class on how to communicate well or code or anything like that. You can just put in your text, put in different images, videos, whatever you need to. So that's a sneak peek of how we approach that at Flocknote. We can answer any questions later, but just something that you can share with the pastor or your volunteers or whoever, so whoever needs to communicate can do that effectively. And then finally, just a visual example, what does it look like to have different groups? I don't mean just having different Excel files of lists of classes or something like that. It's different in any software. In Flocknote, you sort of have a setup where you've got your church, and then each of your groups, your volunteers, religious ed, that's split up by grade, that's split up by day. And then when you're in the Note Composer, you just pick which groups you want to reach. And so it's super simple. It's a shared list. You update one contact, it updates it across the board. You can save templates to save time. You can help your leaders out that way. So hopefully that sort of thing, having a good tool to communicate well, having it look beautiful, and then also splitting it up so you know you're reaching the smallest, most relevant group of people each time, is going to help build that communication with folks. So two examples of parishes that we know about that are using Flocknote well, but it could have been another tool they're using. They just have a bought-in community, and they had a fun time asking for money. So some solid examples of this. One is they're here in Louisiana, not New Orleans, I think maybe a couple hours away in Ragley. I don't really know where that is, but I looked it up earlier. And he had this cool project, Father Jeffrey, here where they had, you know, a big building project going on. The church was expanding. They were having more mass attendance. It was a great problem to have. And his church really understood the vision for the future. They wanted to build a new building. They were excited about it. They kept asking the pastor. They finally got the plans together. Somebody donated the equipment to be able to use. But then they had this cost they had to raise pretty quickly, and it was for probably the most boring thing I can imagine. It was the diesel to run the construction vehicles, and it was going to be $20,000. So all of a sudden they had to say, hey, we really can't start this project. People have already given, you know, and things like that, but we actually need to raise $20,000 more for the gas, for the machines. Now, if you ask me, hey, do you want to donate to an altar or a fountain or a bench with your name on it or something? Okay, maybe I can get excited. Gas, and that's not real exciting, right? So this is not a typical moment of we're going to have a lot of fun raising money for this. But Father Jeffrey had a lot of fun with this. So he's got a great parish. Any parish could be like this, but they communicate well. He knows his people. And they needed to raise $20,000. So he sent out emails. He connected it easily with like the giving fund that he had set up. But he basically said, hey, I'm not allowed to ride this backhoe. And I know you guys would like to see me on a backhoe, until we raise $20,000. And he was, so he had that progress bar going. He was sending out emails, posting on social media. And you know, little thing here, he's raised $8,000 waiting to drive the excavator. But Brandon says we need the goal first, right? And he had like 10 of these things. It was hilarious. But in about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, he raised $23,000. And everyone was so excited about it. I mean, I can't imagine a community more excited about the gas for, you know, these diesel vehicles. But this is a parish community that's bought in. They communicate well. And then when they needed help, sort of in a pinch, they were able to raise that money. And they really did have fun in a very traditional fun sort of way. So that's an example we love to share. And he's a fun pastor there. But really, any pastor can sort of generate the right kind of buy-in. A second example, this is a church we'd love to work with in Texas, Presentation Catholic Church. And if you've ever been in our talks before, a few years ago we worked with them. They had a capital campaign, and they raised like $400,000 in three emails. They just have buy-in. People are excited about what they're doing. They're really clear about things. So that's a story for another day. But this story is they wanted to do this all-notorious project of changing giving tools, right? So switching everything over. They had everything in one system except their online giving. And so they said, listen, it's going to be better for the parishioners long term. It's going to be much easier for the church office. Let's get everything into one system. Of course, the system is Flocknote. That's why we know about it. That's why we're talking about it. But it could have been any tool. And they said, well, how are we going to do this well? You know, let's do this the right way. Hopefully we don't lose donors. Hopefully, you know, people don't get mad at us. And let me ask you this question first. Has anyone switched giving tools in the past at your parish or your diocese, kind of gone from one to the other? Yes. I won't call you out if you have, but yeah, we've had that a little bit. What are the common worries when you're approaching that project? Or maybe what are the reasons you don't approach that project? Yeah. 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 Lose the giving. That's a big one. Be an annoyance to the giver. That's a big one too. Yeah. They're already being generous, right? Why bother them? It's kind of uncomfortable. What else? Any other kind of fears? Yes. Yeah. The numbers like the giving numbers, like envelope numbers and things. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's a pain for sure. Anything else? Big obstacles to that? Those are good ones. I think they kind of fall into two categories. One is the fear of switching. What's going to happen? Are we going to lose donors? You know, are people going to be able to learn it well? Is it going to be less giving overall? What's going to happen? Can we switch back if it doesn't work? And then just the effort too. How long is this going to take? What kind of time are we going to pour into this? Who's going to help us with this project? It's not a fun project, but in a community where people are bought in a community where communication is thriving. This can not only be a fun project, it can be something where you can actually increase generosity, increase donations. And that's what we saw at presentation, which was really a fun experience. So after they switched everyone over from one program to the other, they experienced a 29% increase in their offertory. It's about 100 families that give, to give you a sense of the size of the parish there. But that's over $10,000 a month that they weren't receiving before. So an increase of $10,000, similar numbers for their monthly donations over and above the general offertory, a 29% increase. And did they lose some donors? They did. Some people didn't switch or they couldn't reach them or whatever. But overall, they had an increase in donors because of how well they communicated at the parish. So they actually had 9 more donors at the end of the project than when they started. So for a bought-in community that communicates well, where people understand the goal, where there's something at stake and everybody's moving in the same direction, it can be fun even to switch giving tools. It can be really powerful. For this church, even conservatively, this is like $120,000 of additional revenue in recurring giving a year that they wouldn't have otherwise have had. And so it did take them maybe a couple hours a week for 2 or 3 months. I mean, truly dedicated hours each week, maybe to the tune of like 2 or 3 or 4 hours for a couple months. But the payoff of potentially $120,000 year over year, I would say probably is worth it. I would think we spend a lot of time doing things to try to increase giving that might have a much lower payoff. So having that buy-in really does pay off. If you're curious how they did this well, I'll just show you a thing or two. They have a nice giving page. So they wanted one page where all the giving took place. They set up their funds really nicely. They designed it well. When people are logged in, they can just verify their phone number or their email. They also see all their recurring gifts. They see the gifts they've made in the past. The tax summaries are here. So it's a nice one-stop shop that they have at the parish for this. Of course, they changed over all their links. You know, that's an obvious thing you need to do. So people, when they go to online giving, it all goes to that same spot. But the biggest thing they did, the biggest time, was sending personalized emails. So Flocknote helped them, and we're open to helping any parish out there too, and kind of sat down with them and said, well, let's look at the list of people you have that are giving in this other system. How much are they giving? Some of their staff helped as well. And basically, they just kind of preloaded the priest with 10 or 15 emails a week in Flocknote, sort of ready to go, where Father was able to go in and add a sentence or two at the top about the family, you know, and say, hey, thanks for coming to Mass last week. Hope basketball season's going well. Thanks for having me over for dinner last year. You know, whatever it is, something personal. And then they had a well-designed message that explained why they're changing giving solutions, what the family gave in the past, and not only asking them to switch, but gently encouraging them to increase their gift to the church. And in doing that, people responded, and they responded really well. So that was an exciting process for them. And it wasn't like everyone felt squeezed at the end of it, and now the church really can't ask for anything anymore. This is a church doing things well, where people were excited to give and responded with generosity there. Okay, so you have buy-in. You've communicated very well. You have a specific goal. Something is at stake. Your community's with you, whether this means all the parishes in the diocese or most of them, or a lot of the parishioners in the pews or the members of your ministry. You feel like you're all sort of rowing in the same direction. What now? How can you execute well on this? So we've got 2 or 3 points that hopefully give you some more practicals of how to do things well. So first of all, as much as possible and as much as practical, keep things consistent. So whatever it is that you did to get buy-in, maybe that was a really cool newsletter you mailed to people every month, or a quarterly newsletter from the stewardship department in their mailboxes. Maybe, and we see this a lot, it's a really good digital communication relationship. Maybe it's Father having almost like a fireside chat with his community at the end of Mass, the first Friday of, or you know, the first Sunday of every month. Whatever it is, use that same sort of moment to make your ask or to invite people to give. The less we change, the more we sort of change the ask from the what that came before it, the more people are kind of uneasy with things. So some examples of this, if you are kind of facilitating an awesome digital relationship with folks. You've got great emails that go out, great text messages that go out. And then all of a sudden, how are you asking them to give? It's somebody else from the parish sending it, or somebody else from the diocese you've never heard from, and it's coming in your mailbox, right? And those hard mailers, I know, take a lot of money to kind of get out to everybody and get the right addresses. And there's room for those. But if it's a total departure from how you've communicated in the past, it's probably not the best first way to reach your people. Same thing goes if you were doing the opposite. If it was always hard mailers the whole way through and now you're texting somebody, that's uncomfortable, right? That's not how you've communicated with me in the past. Why is this how you would do it now? Especially when you're making such an important ask of me or inviting me to do something. And so when our software facilitates this, or when the right people can get in front of folks, or whatever that process is that we can continue it, we're able to build that trust and familiarity. So people say, listen, you have communicated with me before. I do feel like you've been talking to me at the church. I do feel like the diocese has communicated well. I do feel like I understand what my bishop does for me here in this half of our state, right? And that matters. And so now that you're coming to me again, it's in the same bubble of familiarity and trust and the same setting. The more we can do that, the better. The more likely people will respond to what we're asking of them. It also means it's going to be easier for people to do. So especially at a parish, you've already asked them to pay for religious education. You've asked them to pay for their, you know, books. You've asked them to set up offertory. You've kind of asked for things here and there, supporting the youth trip. And now you've got a big project. It's different. Maybe there's consultants or some other team at the parish is handling it. Is that ask going to actually take parishioners out into some separate system, a website they've never seen before, a new login that they have to navigate? Or would it be better to just keep it consistent so that they know this is my parish? These are the things I always give to. This is what I support. This is what I'm used to. So it's not always possible to do that. Sometimes you need that separate system for one reason or another, but more often than not, we can streamline a little bit and keep things as much as possible in the same system. And then it's also the case that if people give once before, they've already done religious education payment or signed up for something, this makes it so much easier for them to give again. So in a lot of systems, Flocknote included, it saves their payment information if people want them to. And then it's two clicks for them to go ahead and give to that campaign or to make a pledge or to say that they are interested in doing this or that because they've given before. And so keeping it in the same system just gives you so many more advantages to make it easier for the parish, easier for the parishioner. And that makes it easier to raise money. That makes it part of what's fun to raise money, especially after everybody's kind of bought in on the project and waiting for an opportunity to participate. So in Flocknote, I showed you the note composer before. You can add buttons to bring you to different websites and things like that. You can also make the button go to a particular fund that you have designated so that when people receive the email, they say, great, the parish picnic is coming up. Click on the button, and then they can just donate to the picnic in two clicks. It doesn't go to like a separate website or something else. It could if you wanted them to, but if you're able to keep it all together, much easier for the parishioner to understand the ask, think about it, and commit in one sitting, in one sort of experience, and not lose them. You can also do this with texting. So even some dioceses use texting really well. The Diocese of Pittsburgh does these long text campaigns for Advent or May for the month of Mary, and they send daily text messages out, and it's really encouraging. People opt in, of course. Parishes use texting really well a lot of the time too. Maybe Father sends out the scripture every week or every day, whatever it is. If that's a mode of communication you're using well, it's also a great mode of communication to ask for gifts. And so you can do things in Flocknote like reply to give, where you set up the message and it says, hey, we're doing this. If you want to give, reply yes, and it'll give $2 or $10 or whatever. If they've given before, it'll automatically make the gift. If not, they just put in the information. You can also do text to give, where you set up like a little keyword. That's what Father Jeffrey did for his diesel campaign. You texted diesel to 84576, which is like the Flocknote number, and then you could donate to the campaign there. So really easy to communicate. People got excited about it. And that's only possible because you have a system. Flocknote's not the only one where you're able to kind of manage your members, make your gifts, track all those things, and it's all under one roof. And it's not just easier for your parishioners, it's easier for everyone when that works well. So this is just an example of what that flow looks like. I got a, you know, I texted something. I saw it on a poster or father asked me to at mass. I made that message. Now I'm getting a link back and I'm automatically making a payment. So there's just lots of ways you may not have thought about that you can sort of solicit gifts, encourage giving and take advantage in a charitable way of people's buy-in. All right. And then finally, you are not going to have fun asking for money if your leaders also aren't having fun. Those who are, you know, doing the asking or working on the materials or those who are working in the parishes when you're leading them at the diocesan level. So just a bit of a reminder to support your leaders in all of those things and some practical ways of doing that. So first of all, we won't talk about it again, but just a reminder, if there's not a clear and direct vision and I'm working for you and I'm supposed to execute a plan or ask people to give and I don't understand the vision, it's totally going to fall apart when it gets down to the parishioner, right? So make sure that you really have that vision and that everyone you're working with has that same vision and communicates it really clearly. Secondly, give them tools that they'll love, tools that the parish is already using, tools that they can learn really quickly, tools that have great customer support, whatever the case is. I'm biased. Flocknote works well, of course. But give them tools that make sense, tools that don't require a total separate training or something that only they are using and only you know the answers to how to fix problems to. If they're going to have a good communications tool or a giving tool, and if that can be kind of streamlined across the rest of the parish, that'll make life easier for them. We worked with the Diocese of Memphis on a big capital campaign they did, and they used Flocknote as sort of the communications arm of that. And they equipped every parish with Flocknote for this idea of let's give the parishes a tool that they'll really love. And that was a few years ago that they do that capital campaign. Their parishes love using Flocknote for all their ministries. They've already done the capital campaign. It's ongoing as well, but all their ministries use it now. The priests use it. Ministries communicate different things. Religious Ed is using it. It's just become part of the fabric of life because it's a tool that makes sense for them. And as much as possible, tee folks up for success. So a lot of you I know work on materials to share with parishes or materials to share with parishioners. If you're able to pre-write those scripts for people, if they're making phone calls or talking to folks, or pre-make those materials so they can like drag and drop and put them in, that's really helpful because sometimes they don't have a lot of time and maybe less time than you do. The Archdiocese of Denver does a great job supporting their parishes. In Flocknote, they're able to create Archbishop's annual appeal templates, drop them into a Flocknote parish library, so then a parish admin can just open that up, click the bishop's letter, and send it off to their own parishioners. So things like that, again, in whatever tools you're using to be able to kind of pre-write, pre-work up things for parishes. And that way people know the Archdiocese does support me. My leader here, my pastor does support me. They do appreciate me. They are trying to make this easier for me. And when you get buy-in, when you're communicating well, when your leaders feel supported, it's a good situation. And then finally, thank people often. So I should not be remiss to not thank each and every one of you for what you're doing at the diocese. I know when I worked at the diocese, I would always thank, I did catechesis and religious education, so I always thanked people. I just said, thanks for what you're doing. Frankly, it's really hard to do. And sometimes people would tell me, you know, thanks for saying that. Even my pastor doesn't thank me, you know, and nobody thanks me. And that's just a shame, isn't it? So thank your people, pastors, thank your people. No, everybody. But it's really important because they don't have a lot of time. They're choosing to share that time with you and to your project. And so thank people often, maybe even more often than you think you really need to thank them. Again, some visuals of how we approach some of these things in Flocknote to help your leaders. This is just a picture of what it looks like to track giving in Flocknote. The nice thing is when you go into a fund and click on a member, it's the same place where their sacramental information is. It's the same place where their emails and phone numbers are. It's the same place where their home address is and their previous giving and the groups that they've joined. And you can set up the permissions to manage that appropriately. But when it's one tool that people can share well and kind of have everything in the same spot, it makes a big difference there. So again, you can, if you've got a volunteer that needs to enter payments but not see any other information, we've got a permission for that. If you need somebody that can send out emails to everybody in the parish but never see financial information, we've got a permission for that. You can kind of adjust it to make sure people can only appropriately see what you want them to. And then in Flocknote, you can also run a bunch of Reports. If you've been using Flocknote forever, this is some of our new features that we've come out with, but we run reports on here, and typically they're reports that are actionable, so not just a report that gives you a ton of data, but one where then you can email everybody or export a really helpful list or combine their profile information with their sacramental information or their up-to-date phone numbers with other things that you've tracked in parish registration or a sign-up or whatever that is. So we just try to make it as useful as possible from A to Z for everything you're doing at the parish there. And we do try to back it up with the best customer support you'll ever have. You might know that we're all happiness engineers here, so those in the back as well. And we truly love our jobs. We've worked at dioceses, parishes, ministries. We love working with the church and supporting all of you. So there's going to be awesome customer support, which means you're not the only one answering questions or guiding people. We try to do as much of that as possible. So just to wrap it up, and then we'll get to some questions. The best way to have fun asking for money is when other people are excited about it too, getting that buy-in. And so really and truly, if you take the time, you can't do it overnight, but if you take the time to communicate your specific goal or, you know, get a specific goal, put something at stake, name that, make sure people know what that is, and really communicate well. Be back and forth with people. Be talking to them, emailing them, texting them, sending them letters, put things in the pews, whatever it is that works for your parish community. Then people can buy in. They can know what you're doing. They can get excited about it and sort of want to participate. And from there, make it easy. Keep it consistent for the parish, for parishioners, and then support your leaders. Because if they're having fun, if the parishioners are having fun, you probably will be too. So that's it for specifics on the talk here. There might be some questions I didn't answer. You may have some questions. So we've got a few minutes for that here. But thank you for your attention in the meantime. What questions or what stuck out to you all or would be helpful to chat about? Yes, Father. Yeah, that's a great question. I want to know why you priests are always asking for gift cards. yeah, it's a really good question. How do you get folks to trust these emails or trust these text messages? So I'm going to give a Flocknote answer. It's probably similar with other tools as well. In Flocknote, when you send emails out, when parishioners get them, they come from the same email address. Technically, it's mail@flocknote.com, so that's always going to be consistent. The name that shows up is your group name or your parish name or wherever you're sending from. And then the other piece is with text messages, it's similar. You're not going to suddenly get a message from a new number without that information. So the first time you get a message from a group you haven't sent from before, there's that legalese that also says reply stop if you want to receive this. The church is sending you new messages. And if you receive messages again and again, it'll be in that same thread. So a new message, or what should I say, a true message from the parish should kind of come in the same thread or same vision as what people have had in the past. Usually, almost in all cases, Oscar knows maybe more about this, so correct me if I'm wrong, but those scams, those phishing scams happen from publicly available information on your websites, and it might be deeply hidden too, not even obvious, but in the bulletin on the website or something like that where there's a lot of phone numbers available, a lot of emails available, and there's these bots that can scan the website and then send things out. They can figure out who the pastor is there and do that. We do get emails about that a lot. People asking, did Flocknote get hacked? Or is this from you? Is it not? We can usually steer them straight. But the short answer is the way you're sending it out, you can teach parishioners, it's going to show up like this. And if it doesn't, you know, let us know. Does that help?
I think it's that, like, consistency that you were talking about. And then, like you said, please, please, please don't publish your member directories on your website. And that's the number one way that your parishioners are targeted. Every single time this comes up, we go immediately to Google, we find your member directory, we get something online, and we know that's exactly where they got all these emails from to target your parishioners. So that would be the other thing I would strongly encourage, just to keep that locked down somewhere. We're not in digital online, we're publicly available.
Great, yes.
Do you work with dioceses that kind of use that whole package, and then it
Yeah, let me know if I'm answering your question. So yes, when we partner with diocese, we have it set up where the diocese has an account, parishes have accounts, then the information flows back and forth. So the way it works with giving information is really just aggregate giving data is, you know, how much did this parish raise? How much did this parish raise? Every parish has their own financials, their own bank account it's connected to and things like that. The diocese has their own financials at their end. But you can see some aggregate data for financials, other data, sacramental records, things like that can flow up from the parish to the diocese. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Great question. Yeah, and Oscar, I should introduce Oscar. He's our director of development, so he basically builds flock notes. So that's why he knows so much. Yeah, so we're happy to chat more too, extended for those who want to chat about it. But we work with over 60 dioceses on some level or another to share all that information up. Some of those are also using our database features. Some are just communication. Some of them lean more into the giving thing. So we can chat more. But we got 60 diocesan partners, most of them in the U.S. Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, the question is, can we use WhatsApp in Flocknote? No, the answer is no. So we don't integrate or anything with WhatsApp. We do have texting, so a lot of communities will really focus on texting and not email, but we don't have a direct connection with WhatsApp. Yeah, good question. Anyone have any fun examples while we're gathered together of times where, yeah, it was fun to ask for money, it was fun to raise money, and here's why, or here's what that looked like. Those are always encouraging. I still see head nods, you know, no. That's okay too. That's why you're here, I guess. Yeah.
It's fun at the end of a campaign. It's fun to learn a mortgage. It's fun to do things like that. So that's kind of at the end, a little bit of a payoff satisfaction.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, and doing things like that, like burning the mortgage, that's almost like a sacramental experience, right, of like having this physical experience of something that's happened. So the more you can share that with parishioners too, that's great. Yes?
When I was newly ordained, the cardinal started a new capital campaign, and basically, you know, I knew, you know, basically just out of seminary, I was told by the pastor, go and ask so-and-so for $10,000. I said, ask for what? For a small little community. So I go into this federal community and say, cardinal's like $10,000. They said, how about 15?
You're a good negotiator.
Yeah, okay, sure. So the next person. So when you get things like that happening, it's like you ask something and they say, well, I'll give you a bit more.
Mm.
So things like that are really hard when you find out that people can give you more than you ask.
Yeah, that's fantastic, yeah. Excellent. Thank you all for coming. We're here. We're at the exhibit hall as well, so we're happy to chat. Thank you, everybody.